What's up, everyone? Welcome to this episode of KSDT Radio Podcast. My name is Tori Corpus. How are y'all doing? How are y'all feeling? This is the first episode that I've recorded for KSDT Radio. I'm super hyped about it, mostly because I get to talk to people and interact with the world in some way, even if that just be over Zoom. And, you know, I get to share it with whoever's listening, and we can all not feel so lonely together in this pandemic. This episode is with two leads, Lauren and Rachel at Design for America at UCSD, which is a student org that helps the local San Diego community using the human-centered design process. They design people-centered products, services, and experiences for social good. Lauren and Rachel are amazing. They're dope and so passionate about what they do. So I hope you enjoy the episode and really listen in on what they have to say. Soak up all that info. And yeah, without further ado, enjoy. Here's the episode. What's up, everyone? Today I am joined here with Lauren Ibarra and Rachel Reyes from Design for America DFA at UCSD. I want to start off by asking genuinely how y'all are doing. How are you holding up? It's midterm season, still in a pandemic, still on online school. So, you know, yeah, how are you doing? How is your mental health?
I'm happy that school's almost over.
True.
Yeah, I mean, everything's difficult right now, which is how crazy this year has been. But one perk of like school and clubs is that it's nice to be busy, so you have something to do in the house all day.
No, yeah, I agree. I think it's also just being super productive and super busy all the time is a really good mode of distraction.
Yeah,
but I'm glad to know that y'all are hanging in there, doing the best you can somewhat. I want to start by moving into what DFA is and, you know, getting into the real core of what DFA does and how y'all are involved with it. I first wanted to ask, DFA is focused on the human-centered design process, and that's sort of, you know, the motto of the org. So what does human-centered design process really mean? What is that? What does that mean to you? What does it mean for the org and for its purposes?
I would say there's like an emphasis on co-designing, like you work with the community who you're trying to like design for. You speak with them, gain some research, and then also include them in the design process if possible, just build relationships with whoever you're trying to help. And yeah, it's more like a research process, and it just kind of guides you through how to get to a final design.
Yeah, human-centered design, the way I've always kind of viewed it, especially most of my design experiences limited to my time in DFA, is basically just like it's a tool to allow research to basically become more human and to become more based in empathy and based in truly understanding our users.
Right.
I come from like a biochemistry background, and you know, over there research is very, it's like one way, and it's not like there's always these specific like steps you have to take or rules you have to follow. But the nice part about human-centered design and the way we do it in DFA is that it's very fluid and it allows you to be very reactive to like the true needs of your community.
Right. Can I ask, what are your majors?
I'm biochemistry and cell biology.
Yeah, I'm just science specialization in design.
Okay. Yeah, no, cool. The reason why I ask is because I feel like design is a really broad term, and it's sort of tossed around and stretched across a bunch of different fields and areas and specialties. And I'm curious, what does design mean to you, and how has joining DFA maybe shaped your understanding of what design is and what it can be?
I think it's pretty cool, like how you said it applies to a bunch of things, and Lauren kind of encompassed it really well. It's like a tool that you can use in anything. Like we recently had an event, design in different fields, and it can apply to government, and that's called civic tech. It can be in public health. It's just really helpful to consider in any field.
Yeah, I could actually add to that. So I'm actually a pre-medical student, but the reason why I really like design is because it teaches you kind of what I was saying before, like a lot more human skills when it comes to like interactions and research. And that's something that honestly, like a lot of people in the medical field have recognized as a problem these past couple years, that medicine has become a little bit too inhuman. And that's why they're starting to implement things called like patient decision aids and shared decision making, which in reality is just human-centered design in medicine. Like that's literally what it is. So it's something that is kind of in every field. It's just has a different name.
Expand this more. What do you mean by inhumane?
It's just that when you have a system that's so large, and not only that, but like medicine is like a really interesting balance. You work with people, but you do have to have a bit of an impartial and like objective mind at times, mm-hmm. because if you become too emotionally invested, that could also be a big detriment as well.
Right.
But of course, in the past medicine, the way people kind of taught it and addressed it, like back in the like 60s and like 60s to 80s was like to be a little bit more focused on the pathology and not so much the human. Okay. But nowadays there's more of a push to treat medicine holistically. So taking into account like finances of an individual, religion, social, all of that is now being more of a focus in medical schools and not just the medicine.
Yeah, no. And connecting this to Design for America, I think that the org definitely emphasizes empathy, as we said before, and that's across all fields again. For you two, is there any particular moment or connection with someone or product or experience you've made that you just feel super strongly emotionally about, you know, and you've just really understood how big a part that empathy plays in the whole design process?
I can go first if you want some some time to think. For me, one project, I've been on the same project for 3 years now, just because every year we've always kind of like made a few more connections and had a lot of development. And one of my favorite moments is basically my project is centered around teaching design thinking as a critical thinking tool to low-income and underserved students. And it's unfortunate that in the education field, especially when it comes to primary education, so like elementary students, there's like almost an element of like they can't handle something, like you can't push them, or like concepts are too abstract for them to really understand, which of course comes at a certain extent. Like you can't teach a very small child like organic chemistry or something. But I think in teaching design to students, one part that was really amazing was we were testing and we hadn't been there for about 2 weeks. And then we came back and we started our activity where we kind of have like a refresher. And we were expecting the students, when we were asking them about the steps, to be like, oh yeah, we built something and we used Play-Doh and we used sticks. But in the end, they actually started being like, oh yeah, and then we prototyped and then we reiterated. So it was nice to see that like when you push students, they actually will respond in a way that's like very advanced despite the expectation of their age. Right.
No, that's so cool and so gratifying and amazing. We talked about this and touched on this a little bit earlier, but I want to just push it a little bit further. How has your understanding of design changed, you know, with all your experiences in DFA? How has it evolved and furthered since you've joined the org?
Yeah, for myself, it was actually pretty eye-opening because I went to a high school that was a tech high school, and I did what was called the design pathway, but it was really interesting because it was basically like engineering and product design. So in my head, that's what design was, like just doing like building things and constructing things and prototyping. Right. So coming to DFA, I really got to see the side of design, like we've been saying this whole time, that's like more human, and aspects of research that are more involved with really getting to know your target community and not just building something that you think is going to be good for them, but building something that you know through getting to understand them, getting to work with them, actually will be a beneficial solution.
Right.
And beyond that, like a lot of the individuals I've met from D-Lab because of DFA
and professors I've met because of DFA have also really opened my eyes, because before DFA, I was just like a pre-med student, but because of my experience with research in DFA, I actually want to go MD, MPH now and help incorporate design into more of like medical research and clinical research, because it is relatively new and medicine tends to be like the last frontier to change because it is very traditional. But there's a few firms now that are starting to open up applying design in that aspect and are showing how beneficial it can actually be.
For me, it's kind of just like what Design for America exposed me to. So at UCSD, I feel like design education is very focused around like UX and just like getting into the tech industry. I know there's like global ties and other things like that where you can get exposed to like different fields, but it's just kind of like very like big on tech.
Right.
And so through DFA, I met someone who like got me the job I'm working at now with a design lab, and it's on like a women's health project, specifically like menopause, and just realizing that like, you know, you can go into like health with it and you can get to speak with like women specifically about their like in-depth experiences with like one part of their lives that like, you know, a lot of women are gonna have to go through sometimes earlier, just like the research aspect of design and really just remembering like what it comes down to, like you're helping these individual women even if you can't see them when you're actually designing the screens. Like so much is at stake. It's really about the experience, like Lauren mentioned before. Like there's a flow, there's like a journey that they're on, there's a journey they were on before they got to whatever site or whatever product you're creating for them, and you're hoping to like fill in a gap so that when they leave, that's what they came here for. And so just getting to speak with women one-on-one and like hear them be really emotional and vulnerable when I just approached them in like a Walmart is like really cool. So that's what DFA introduced me to, like just the whole like emotional side of design and like just remembering that they're actual people and it's not just like a fun project put on your portfolio. Like you can actually help people with what you're doing.
Yeah, no, that's so amazing. And I think that learning that people are human is so much easier said than done. And because you have to be so vulnerable and so emotional, and I think that you finding your connection with women in particular just opens a whole new door to empathy and new level of compassion and understanding for the world and people, and learning how to use your passion and purpose to serve others. So you both seem like you have such strong roots from DFA and have been really imprinted on by DFA and the world of, you know, human connection and human-centeredness that it's provided with you. How in particular do you want to, and we've talked about this before, but how in particular do you want to take those experiences and use them in the future and implement them in your career, in your life, in your future plans?
I think Lauren and I would probably have different answers because I'm like being taught design in school, and it's kind of like I was in like through these classes that kind of give you a solution already and they give you the users already, or like tell you to redesign existing products that are just like music or like say like Photoshop, and you're like, oh, everyone hates Photoshop, lol, or you know, like newbies, and so let's make it easier to use. But being in DFA, it's kind of shown me the beginning stages of a design project and like having a dream or like being like empathetic for a certain group who you see is struggling and realizing that's kind of what design is. Even the people who created like, you know, the Adobe products, they probably had a vision, and who did they talk to, how did they get there, and like it's just really cool to like be able to have so much power in the early stages but really try to like be objective and use research, talk to people.
For myself, like more of like a high level would be, my dream would be to like work in a research firm at, like as a physician that works on shared decision making and patient decision aids, just because of DFA, I actually had an internship this past summer that was a multidisciplinary lab that had physicians and designers. And from what I learned there is that in order to make these type of like decision aids, you know, you need a multidisciplinary team. Like you can't just have designers doing it and you also just can't have doctors doing it. So I would hope to kind of help bridge that gap and hopefully be able to work in a firm or like some form of a research lab that does that kind of work. In a more low level sense, I always kind of advocate with my pre-med friends that one of the most beneficial things I've learned from DFA is what Rachel said, like learning different aspects of a team is so important. Learning when to be a team member, when to be a lead, when to understand what's going on in the background is just like something that I think applies to every single field. Like in, like I can relate it like to medicine, like, you know, there's gonna be times where you're the med student, you're the resident, you're the attending, and being able to empathize and understand what those different roles mean can make you so much of a better worker. So I think learning how to work in a team is like the most beneficial thing I've learned from DFA.
Yeah, I mean, both of you are now leads of DFA. How has taking on this role changed your perspective of the org, of yourself, and how have maybe your priorities shifted?
Yeah, just kind of like adding on, I think the focus for me has shifted from like, you know, being a member and a co-lead, your focus is so much on your project and making sure that goes well. But now I think it's like taking the confidence I've gained from DFA and being able to pass that on to younger members. Like one thing I really, like not to brag, but one thing I really love about Rachel and Maya's partnership is we have been focusing so much on being responsive to what our studio needs. And Rachel's been doing an amazing job, like getting alumni to come speak and professionals to come speak. I've been focusing on doing workshops that teach design and teach design in not just like a factual way, but more of like a application type way. And I think it's just knowing that once we leave that there will be, even if it's just one student that is able to hold on to what we teach and what we, the experiences we have, just knowing that that knowledge gets to be passed on is really gratifying.
Yeah, and like having a leadership position is not easy at all, and knowing that you have that responsibility that you have to guide others and guide new members into finding their passion as well is a really hard and scary thing to do. But I think that, you know, I haven't really seen you in the action of working in DFA, but even from my limited knowledge of the org, I can see that you both are so passionate and so driven, and that makes you so trustworthy and so like respectable and easy to just an easy mentor to have in the group. So yeah, Rachel, do you have anything to add?
This is actually the first like major leadership role I've had in college. Like I've been on like a board for a different org, but like I will say, it's gonna sound really cheesy, but I teared up a bit because, you know, like I had no help from like family, and like even now I'm kind of tearing up and I hate that. Like
no, dude, you're so but, good.
Like it's such a small thing, like, you know, to feel like you've dedicated yourself to something you care about, and like, yeah, you know, nothing's gonna be perfect. I've definitely like made mistakes even just with like posting about an event and I'm like, oops. But just to know that you have like background and like experience and you can help the new people coming in, like when people ask a question, you're like, wait, I like could definitely help with that, I've had so much experience with that. It's like really eye-opening because you don't really know what you know until something comes up. So yeah, just like it's really helped me see myself differently. And I didn't even think I was going to get into the org because I applied with a friend who was way more experienced than me. He like came into college as a designer. And yes, so it's really cool that DFA, especially in the application process, like we really want people who are just passionate and not necessarily like, oh, the most experienced with design, like human-centered design, I could give a class on it. Like, we're really about design education and just getting people who are passionate about social impact. And I think that was like perfect for me at the time. And it's really like held my hand through college when I didn't have anything else to. So yeah, it's really nice.
No, that's, I just love hearing how passionate you guys are about DFA and how interwoven it is in your lives. And it's just very heartful and refreshing to hear. So that's, it's amazing. I want to move on now to talking about the two projects that you each individually worked on and focused on. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Lauren, you focused on education equity, and Rachel, you focused on children's nutritional health. So let's start off by asking, what drew you to these particular issues in the San Diego community?
Nutrition health, yeah, I think it's like personally significant just because like I've struggled with like physical health. And I do think like, not to like assign blame, but it really is like, I wasn't really educated in what health meant. And my mom, like as a single mom, kind of just got whatever would stay fresh in the pantry and I could just grab like candy, whatever I needed.
Yeah.
There were no restrictions and no talks about the consequences, and having to reverse so much damage, especially like how you think about food.
Right.
It's just, it's kind of hard. It's like, you know, I'm getting into college and I'm like, maybe I should eat healthier.
Same.
And yeah, and I think it's really cool, like side note about like the progress of my project, to see like how like intersectionality is such a big thing. Like obviously like education, like it's really important to not only like but why, but also to think about like who are you targeting with your design. Like for me, I went in there thinking like, okay, I have a partnership with like this resource in the community that I worked in, National City, called Olivewood Garden. And like, they already had like an educational program for kids who would come on field trips from their school.
Mm-hmm.
And they would also like give the produce that they grew in their garden to the school. So like kids would kind of have this like sense of like, oh, look, I went there and this is the lettuce that we saw growing. But they weren't able to access parents due to just like budget restrictions. They worked on like kind of like a volunteer basis. And I just thought that was so important because they had no means of knowing if these kids were actually like going to use these like pieces of advice or like the recipes that the parents would have to like buy the ingredients for, or like, and the parents might think, oh, you know, not the healthiest. And when I was speaking to parents, when they told me about how they pack their kids' lunch or why they let them eat at school, they were like, oh, I'll give them like a juice box and like a small pack of cookies because it's healthy. And, you know, like they think like the size is what it's about and stuff. And yeah, so it was just kind of like from my background. And then as I spoke to families more, like it just showed me like, wow, like this is a big issue, especially in like lower income areas where it's mainly about like saving money and what's going to last longer.
Yeah. And even having like the time to make your kid a lunch and planning out.
Yeah. Things. Surprisingly, that was like, at least in National City, that wasn't like the biggest issue. Like they wouldn't mind taking the time to cook if like moms were stay at home.
Okay.
Yeah. Like it's really interesting to see, like, it really depends on like who you're trying to help. That was like something that from my experience I thought I would like to work on, and then kind of just go in blindly from there and try to understand the specific community.
I think it's a great problem to be invested in and working on. Lauren, do you have anything to add about your project and education equity?
So for myself, education has always been a really important thing. I'm a first generation student to college, and both of my parents are immigrants from Mexico, so education has always been highly valued because it's not a guarantee for everybody. And just growing up, like my family has very, very different socioeconomic statuses throughout. I have individuals that are on like welfare and things like that. And then there's also individuals that make a ton of money in tech. So seeing the differences in just like public education between two cities, or even like within the same city, two schools, and the amount of funding they get, the amount of respect they get, is just astounding. Because the fact that simply where you live can limit how you grow and how your mind is able to adapt to education, adapt to what you've been taught, is just one of the like most unfair things about our public education system. So I decided to make that topic for my team because I wanted to help in some way. to equitize education. And of course, it's such a big issue, and it's not something that'll be solved with just my project or just a couple projects, but, you know, being able to add in at least one small percentage to equalize things or to equitize things is what drove me to that project.
Yeah, of course. No, so I'm from LA, and I don't know how similar. I'm assuming it's the public education system here in San Diego is similar to that of LA, just because we're neighboring cities, you know, both in California. But at our schools, we have, like, even within a school, there's a great division between the education that each student gets, because they divide us into, like, the gifted magnet students versus the regular students. So, you know, I can relate to this because it's just as relevant as a problem in LA. So, you know, like, how big of a problem is it here in San Diego? And, you know, how dramatic are these differences in education?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty big problem because we are a border population. It makes things really unique because we have some students that, you know, cross the border every single day, or students that are new immigrants and their parents don't speak English. And that makes things harder when it comes to, like, school and learning. So what tends to happen, unfortunately, is, especially because, like, San Diego itself, like, we also have very affluent areas like La Jolla or, like, North County.
Yeah.
So those areas tend to have very, very new teaching techniques, a lot of funding, private schools, charter schools. So, you know, a lot of the focus is there. It's like, oh, look at how innovative this school is. But then they're not acknowledging that there's all these public schools in South County towards the border that don't get any of these resources.
Right.
Or if they do, they call what actually a student from one of those areas told me, they refer to it as brain draining, which just means that they take only the high scoring students from low income areas and put them into special schools like charter schools and whatnot.
Oh, weird.
So then once again, you're leaving, like, such a large population to just kind of deal with what they were dealt. So it is a very big issue in San Diego.
It seems like both of you have been working a lot with children. How's that been?
I love working with kids. I have always, like, volunteered and done mentorship things, and I'm the oldest of, like, my generation in my family. Okay. So I'm just always used to little ones running around. But I think in more of a design aspect, a really interesting part is kind of learning how to get, or, like, how to incorporate, like, data and the needs of your community when they are so young is very different, because you can't just, like, ask them, like, you can't just have an interview and be like, oh, like, so did you like it? Did you not like it? Like, you have to approach it in a very different way.
Okay.
Like, in my project, when we're checking how they're feeling during an activity, we do the thumbs up method. So, like, you know, thumbs down if you don't like it, in the middle, and then thumbs up. And it's just really cute to, like, see their reactions and, like, kind of, like, you have to gauge a lot more off of, like, emotion and just, like, how much they're paying attention, how much they're retaining. Like, it's a lot different than working with, like, an adult community where you can kind of just get information a lot more directly. It's a lot more of, like, an indirect approach.
For me, I would say, like, I didn't necessarily focus on children because I shifted to, like, focus on the parents who, it seemed like there was a gap in that specific community in terms of, like, resources. But when I initially started trying to, like, approach children, you know what I mean? Like, trying to, like, design for children, it was, because I didn't get as far into, like, developing those relationships with, like, whoever had, like, contacted children, say, like, the principal or, like, their specific teacher who was more helpful, and, like, just establishing those relationships was pretty difficult. I think in trying to connect with children and their families, I think that's how to interact with the children. But how to, like, get those good relationships and, like, get people knowing you, get specific families knowing you and trusting you and being a little bit more talkative. Like, is that what you want? It's like, no, any information is helpful. And yeah, so it's a very patient game.
Right. Yeah. No. It seems like, you know, DFA is obviously a very interactive org. How have you taken into things being primarily online and things being more disconnected lately into account for this year and, you know, moving forward?
Yeah, so right now in terms of like just our studio culture, like we've been focusing a lot more on like education and resources and having a lot of like online events, mostly through Zoom. And then with our projects, we've introduced or reintroduced Slack as a resource for all of our members, okay, just to keep that communication a little bit more organized and opened. And a lot of our projects this year are, because of COVID, are focused more on like a virtual space. Mm-hmm. So their research isn't 100% dependent on having to be in a physical area in order to conduct prototyping or in order to conduct like testing sessions. Mm. So that was fortunate that our teams were able to adapt. But yeah, most of what we've been doing is like via Zoom. Mm.
Yeah, no, I mean, we do what we can. And it seems like you all are really holding it down. What projects in particular are you all excited about this year? Or, you know, just anything. What are you excited about for the org going forward?
Well, I mean, one thing that I'm really excited to see is we introduced a new aspect to DFA called TBD, which is stands for to be designed.
Okay.
Which basically, traditionally DFA is a year-long project that all of our teams go through, but we understand that a lot of students may not have the ability to do something that's year-long or may want to gain some experience first.
Right.
So TBD is a short-term project that students can be a part of with a pre-scoped community partner.
Okay.
And this quarter, it's Latinos Contra Cancer. And there's three different teams doing projects related to them. And it's just really interesting to see kind of how these smaller teams work in a more of like a faster pace.
Right.
And so far things have been going really well. Our TBD directors, Kylie and Jason, have been doing a really great job. But yeah, I'm most excited to see how all of those projects turn out.
Yeah. And I think besides that, like adding on to like the design education side, like Lauren said, I think we're both really passionate about sharing what we've learned or like our connections, having people talk, and like kind of related to TBD, like establishing more of like a mentorship with industry like members, so that like, you know, people who have actually like experienced and give feedback, and it's more of like it seems more of like an official process for members who are coming into this wanting experience, and like they feel a little bit more confident getting feedback, speaking with people who have more experience. Yeah. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, so for any prospective members or anybody, you know, showing interest or that's looking for a design org or looking to be a designer, what is DFA looking for? And, you know, we touched base on this, but what qualities in a new member are you looking for?
Yeah, I think for me personally, and I think just for DFA as a whole, like we said before, like we mostly look for the individuals who are passionate about social impact. Although DFA is a great org to get connections, mentorship, professional connections, and just anything in that realm, our best projects always come out of individuals who are really passionate about a specific topic. So we're very welcoming to people who have a lot of design experience and really want to work on a specific social issue. And even those who have no design experience, like Rachel said, like we're focusing a lot on design education. So your level of experience is not a determinant of if someone's able to apply, but rather just, are you willing to work on a social issue?
Right.
Do you have a passion for it? And are you willing to think a little bit more abstractly and really get to know a community in order to address and create some form of a solution?
Yeah,
I think Lauren pretty much nailed it. Definitely no design experience. It's really great to see people from different educational backgrounds come into, like, for one, like being different majors. Like I love when you see like global health or anything education come in, because, you know, that provides us with so much like of a bigger perspective. Like we learn from you, you might learn from our like design or medical background. So that's pretty cool. Oh, and lastly, I think we have someone who's not an undergrad, or maybe two. Two members who are not undergrads. So seeing how passionate people are like, maybe I don't need experience, I'm not an undergrad, yeah. But like, no, it's like you really just get to like help communities. So yeah, just seeing that passion is,
yeah, for sure. So, you know, as this interview is coming to an end, unfortunately, what are some last things that you would like to say about DFA? How would you plug it? You know, any last things that we should know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a repeat of what I said before, but, you know, design, again, open to anybody. You do not have to be someone who's even interested in going into design as a field. Like Rachel was saying, like, we like learning from different educational backgrounds, learning from people from different majors, different departments,
right,
and creating a more multidisciplinary org, because we do lean very CogSci HCI heavy, but having more individuals who don't come from that background necessarily will definitely help expand the reach of where a lot of these projects can go. And a lot of these skills, like I mentioned, are more, they're just general, like, human interaction,
right,
work dynamic skills that you can learn from design. So it doesn't necessarily have to be like, oh, you need to learn like steps 1 through 6, but in reality you're learning the critical thinking from design, and you can help apply that to like anything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I strongly encourage anyone who is at even at minimally interested in DFA to follow our Facebook, follow our Instagram. We also have a website that we're updating right now, and we'll be uploading videos from our educational resources and presentations. But yeah, just to kind of stay connected, we always kind of keep in mind people who email us and ask questions for our next round of recruitments.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just if you're at all interested, feel free to contact us.
Cool, yeah.
I think to add to that, like, one last thing is, like, you know, we all have our passions, and like, and so I think that Design for America is such a unique opportunity at UCSD, because there's a lot of design education for sure on campus.
Right.
You know, obviously smaller projects to hop onto, but to have this kind of sense of autonomy is pretty cool. Like, if you want to eventually move into a team lead position or like suggest a project topic, we're going to be giving you all of our resources, all of our connections, and we're going to provide you with a whole team to get that done, like, to the best of your ability. We have funding. It's just such a great opportunity. Like, and it really makes you know the design process more when you have to consider, out of all the things we can do right now, what do we want to do? What's best fit for this project at this moment? And that's such a unique thing. It's not as guided as a class or as like a design-a-thon, you know? Like,
right, yeah.
So it really helps you grow as a designer in such a, like, crazily, like, fast way, mm-hmm. but, like, really in-depth, yeah.
Right, yeah. Everybody go check out Design for America, DFA, across all social media, Instagram, Facebook, their website. Thank you so much, Lauren and Rachel, for talking with me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course. You both are amazing and so passionate about what you do, and it was really refreshing and such a great conversation to have. So thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening to KSDT Radio Podcast, and I wish you all the best. Stay safe and peace.